before that, or Katrina, or, you know, or the wildfires in California. I mean, thank you, Puerto Rico as well, as there's still places without power a year later. So it's real, it's bad. Third, it's us. There's no question about that. This is not a natural cycle or anything. This is human-caused climate change. But the fourth and important one, there's hope. Yes. Yeah. Because I'm an optimist. And optimists are different in many senses, but especially if you're the person in power, you love pessimists. And nothing's going to happen. You love cynics. Oh, it's, you know, nothing's going to happen. The optimist expects change. And because we can change and the optimist expects it, change is more likely to happen. So, a brief primer on climate change. There's four big sorts of effects. Sometimes you could even list it as three. But floods, first one, which we're seeing. Droughts and heat waves. If you want to combine those, I like to keep them separate because sometimes you can have heat waves when there aren't droughts. And then sea level rise, which is going to be a larger and larger problem. There's some evidence that we could have over a foot of sea level rise in the next 80 years. So think of what you like about the beach and think about it being a foot higher. Yes, sir. Yeah, thank you. Diseases are spreading indeed. We already know, I mean, we learned Zika, right? West Nile virus is now common here. Excuse me. And the mosquito season is longer, which is not a good thing at all for us. So I'm going to base this a little bit on the book Drawdown by Paul Hawken. He was a business guru in the 90s, affected a number of other people, but he actually got a bunch of economics and engineers and engineering people and so on to crunch the numbers and say, what are the best things for us to do to draw down the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? The website is drawdown.org. And the top four are interesting because some of them we can all deal with. Number one is refrigerant management. We don't really do with that. Number two, though, onshore wind. So anything you can do to support wind energy. As it stands in Georgia, we're lousy. But Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, farmers are making what they call mailbox money because they get a check every month because they've got windmills on their land and they don't take up a lot of space. They don't interfere with the crops, but they are, you know, making them money every month. And making clean energy all the time. A third, though, reduce food waste. And fourth is a plant-rich diet. And these are things that are all within our control and that all make sense for us. And we don't think about it usually, but our food is embodied energy. And some foods take a lot more energy to create. I mean, just like, you know, there's some dishes. I've made a chocolate raspberry torte sometimes. And you know, this is not something you just whip up in 5 minutes. Other things I do whip up in 5 minutes. But, you know, that's a sort of embodied energy. But it takes the energy to plow the land, presumably plant the seeds, add whatever inputs of chemicals or non-chemical treatments to irrigate. Pumping water can be very expensive. And then to harvest and then to transport. That takes a lot of energy. And if you're talking about a meat product, chicken, pork, beef notice, those take even more because they have the inputs of all the corn and other things that have fed them. And so this is why reducing food waste is so important. I mean, what it does for us, you know, number one, you make fewer trips to the grocery store. It saves you money, and it saves energy for the world. Right now, we estimate that we throw out a third of our food. Some of this is, you know, second graders in the school cafeteria who just aren't hungry, or maybe at your house. Some of this is big corporations saying, oh, that tomato got bruised, we can't sell it, you know, whereas if it was at your house, you might cook it and use it for something. And some of it is farmers' insistence on perfect stuff. So that can make a difference. And then a plant-rich diet is what they crunch the numbers. If we all got the required amount of protein, we could reduce the amount of cattle, pork, etc. All that could drop tremendously. And when I say we reduce, but the rest of the world goes up to 50 grams of protein. And that is huge. That's number four on the list. Of the top 20 in drawdown, 8 were food related, which was just amazing to see. I'm going to highlight a couple more. Energy efficiency is huge. I'm sure everybody has LED lights for the most part in their house, and you know, I get to be the crotchety old man now. Yeah, turn the lights off, right? But insulation, thermostats, and it doesn't mean just having a programmable thermostat. You actually have to program it. So you're turning it down when you're not home. Energy Star stuff is a great savings. If you don't shop for the Energy Star label, please do for any appliances you buy. And then hybrid vehicles, electric cars. Does anyone here have an electric vehicle? Yeah. Great. And how's it work? Doing well? Yeah. How often do you go to a gas station? How often do you, yes, how often do you have to get your spark plugs changed? Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's less maintenance, and it costs you how much for a fill-up, do you think?
Oh, it's free. It's a Tesla. If I do it at home, I have to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Right. How many of you with gasoline-powered vehicles can say that? Yeah, exactly. And Jerry, you want to say anything about your experience? Right. And do you drive past the gas station with sort of a look of disdain? Yeah, that's a great thing. And then the last thing that's obvious here, Georgia is not good for wind, but it is great for solar. And a wonderful thing is to put solar systems on your roof, which now is a great time because there's a group buying project called Solarize Atlanta, where because they can focus on individual neighborhoods, they don't drive around as much. And so the organizers get solar companies to bid on a price per kilowatt, you know, per square foot of roof, as it were, and they give you that price wherever you are, which is usually 10 or 20% less than their conventional pricing if you were getting a custom system. But it's cheaper for them because they can count on the volume. So if you've not considered that, please do. It's not suitable for every home. I thought this would be a nice roof for it. We get 30% tax break right now on the solar system and on batteries if you install it. The average cost, just so you know, heard yesterday of a system installed in the Solarize program was around $9,000. So not, you know, it's not $100,000 that it was 10 years ago, and it's not, you know, $8,000 or $7,000 that it will be in, you know, 5 or 10 years. But you get the benefit of making your own power. And that's very satisfying. You drive down your electric bill. A friend of mine, her net bill was 1 kilowatt hour with her solar system. I think that was in August. So, and the next one is just my favorite. He says it's number 69 on the list. I don't think so. But bicycling is what I've always done around here. And it's just great. It's better for me. You know, helps me burn calories and not oil. Better for the planet. Good cardio exercise. How many people have to go to a gym and do some sort of exercise? Yeah. And, you know, instead I get on my bike and do my exercise. Reduces stress and air pollution. And then the Quakers have a saying, preach wherever you go. If necessary, use words. But I've realized that's not sufficient right now. I mean, we could all go to solar houses and electric cars and bicycles, and it would not be enough to change. Oh, it's going to take group action, and the group I'm associated with is Citizens Climate Lobby. This is us gathering in June. That's actually about 2 years ago. The Capitol was under reconstruction. But I'm about right here. Yeah. And we believe in diversity. The last conference we had stipends for conservatives and for people of color. And I think we got about 100 of each with the scholarships. And what Citizens Climate Lobby preaches is that we do know how to solve this without destroying the economy, which some of our political leaders say, oh, it would kill us. You know, not dealing with it is actually what will kill us. But when we want to use less of something, we make it more expensive. You know, this is what we have done with cigarettes traditionally, and alcohol. You know, alcohol does not cost much to make, but it costs a lot more at the store because there are taxes to discourage us from drinking too much, at least most of us. I should tell you about Brett Kavanaugh. What I think I heard last night is he is very, very determined person. You know, it's like he doesn't know how to stop. Yeah. So, back to my subject. Sorry about that aside. A fee on carbon is a great thing. We make it more expensive. And we recommend doing this at the mine, the wellhead, the port, wherever it comes in to the system. Because these are relatively few places. We can control them. You know, the oil and company and the coal company knows how much they're shipping. And so we place this fuel, get a fee at the pump, at the port, mine, wellhead. And then the second magic thing is to take all this big pile of money and return it evenly to all households equally. So that, you know, you get the same share that Bill Gates gets and that Governor Nathan Deal would get and, you know, I would get. You know, everyone will get the same amount. But, you know, it's going to mean more to me than it will to Bill Gates. And then there's a lot of people in our society, it'll mean a lot more to them than it will to me. And so here's what we see if we do this under the econometric study we had done. First off, without using regulations, just by putting a steadily rising fee of $10 a ton, which comes to about 9 cents a gallon for gasoline, then we get 33% reduction, and they compared this to 1990 levels, in 10 years, a 50% reduction in 20 years. So it will have a strong effect. Economists, 90% or more of economists say this is a necessary thing to reduce carbon levels. And then what happens to the money? We believe give it back to all households evenly because that's the easiest, fairest, most obvious thing. It would come in 10 years, it'd be about $97 per month for a share. 20 years, $132 a month. Our vision is children get a half share, so you can do the math sort of, but a family of four, that would be about $300 a month after 10 years. It would take a while to get to that level because in 10 years, you know, the price of gasoline would be up 90 cents a gallon. But it would do us good. And believe it or not, it is good things for the economy too. Again, the same study, 2.1 million new jobs in 10 years, 2.8 million in 20 years. So it's a tremendously economy building effect. And the reason is if I give $100 a month to Bill Gates, it's not going to change his spending habits. If we give $100 a month to someone in the bottom of our society, the poorest quintile, they will spend it. And when you put money into the economy, it has a multiplier effect. And the big areas, the biggest areas that would go into are healthcare and retail. So that was just amazing to see. And the good news, just from the air pollution, we estimate 227,000 lives over 20 years. And people are like, what? And the answer is, we don't know how bad the coal dust and diesel fumes and other things are for us. But they do have a negative effect on our breathing. You know, many of us have asthma or allergies, right? I mean, we all know people who have them if we don't have them ourselves. And these are people with sensitive lungs. Some people have COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you know, and indeed some of us are on oxygen. So this is very important for making our air cleaner. And again, without regulations. So our success so far, the biggest thing we can point to is we created a group called the Climate Solutions Caucus. We did it with two congressmen from Florida, Carlos Curbelo and Ted Deutsch. And we keep adding members. I had to change this slide last night because we got two new members this week. It's even numbers. You have to join with a partner. We have not gotten any Georgia congressmen yet to join. Yeah, afraid so. Yeah, we've gotten interest from several, but they are not joining yet. John Lewis hasn't found a partner. Yeah, for some of them, and Hank Johnson also has told us he'd like to find a partner. But we will keep trying. We have, when we go to the Congress in June and then in November, we have 500 to 520 meetings with members of Congress in one day. We bring, you know, hundreds of volunteers and poof, have the meetings. And we let them know what they're thinking. Because one of the disadvantages is right now, Republicans are saying, well, I can't do it because then, you know, there'll be some loudmouth in the crowd who will object. But in reality, most Republicans will tell you climate change is real. And many of them will say it needs to be dealt with. And we've had some of the reddest members of the Freedom Caucus join the Climate Solutions Caucus. So we're optimistic. But the thing is, we can't do it. The more of us who speak up, the stronger our voices will be. But it's important to know, it's when we do not speak up, then the only people Congress hears from are the people who are paid to be there, the paid lobbyists. And the other great news is that CCL has the tools to teach people how to lobby, how to write successful letters to the editor, how to write op-eds, how to get a minister or other community leader to sign an endorsement letter for our program. And so this is, you know, if you join CCL, you can have these skills. So I encourage you all to exercise your personal power and join Citizens Climate Lobby, even if all you do is make a phone call twice a year. Before we go to members of Congress, we ask constituents to call the week before. And, you know, when they say, well, we heard from 200 constituents last week on one day to say, yes, we needed to act on climate change, you know, that's when the member says, oh, this is an issue I will be concerned with. So, and chapters meet monthly. The Atlanta chapter meets on second Saturdays. The North Atlanta chapter meets on third Thursdays. There's chapters in Gwinnett, North Fulton, Kennesaw, Dalton, Athens, Gainesville, and a chapter coming in Columbus. So this is what we do, and this is where we can all take part and learn to be more effective. And it's, you know, it's not about being green and such, but there's an immense personal satisfaction when you can talk to a member of Congress and change them, just like many of you will have seen the woman who talked on the elevator to Jeff Flake, you know, and then he took action. Was that because she talked to him? We don't know. But don't you know, she feels very satisfied. And you can have that sort of satisfaction from taking some of these steps. And better for you and for our planet. And it's especially a concern. The Trump administration released a long report this week that buried in it said, oh yeah, we're going to have 7 degrees of warming by the year 2100. You know, I probably won't be alive then, but my children could. And if I have grandchildren, they could. And that's tremendous. 7 degrees of warning. I like going to the supermarket and buying food. And if there's no food there because there was a drought or a fire or a flood, then that's a huge, huge issue. So, the EPA, I don't remember, was that an EPA report? Okay, I thought it might have been DOT or somebody. But anyway, the conclusion was, it's happening, we can't stop it. Right. Yeah, and in reality, no, we can make changes, and that would be the important thing. Yes, Al? Okay. Trees that grew up here, in our neighborhood, many of them grew here because they could be at the right sort of temperatures, and they may not grow at higher temperatures. Mountains will lose a lot of trees because some of them are based on the temperatures of the elevation. Our peach crop depends on getting enough cold weather every winter. If they don't get the cold days, we don't get peaches. Our blueberry crop, conversely, has been frozen out a couple of times by a late freeze. Georgia has had a shorter growing season, interestingly. So our stuff coming into the port of Savannah, if sea level rises and it floods the equipment, that's tremendous. Our tourism industry, the good news is we're Atlanta. We're not at sea level, unlike, every other major city. The bad news is everybody knows that. And they will all be coming here. As it is, we think there'll be another 2 million people moving to Atlanta in the next 20 years. And there may be more. If Orlando gets hit by a massive flood, a lot of those people will say, what's the closest big city we can go to? Oh, let's not go to Miami. yeah, so the effects are numerous, and, it's real and it's bad. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Chemicals used on animals, there's two or three things that happen. One effect is called bioaccumulation, meaning if you spray mosquito and then, a bird eats the mosquito, and then say a eagle eats the bird, it will have much more concentrated levels of that pesticide. So. There are, but it's relatively small. If you want to use chemical treatments to keep fleas off your pet, that's, yeah. That sounds great. It is great. And it's, Alan, and then. Climate accelerators, yeah, there are some, like, we at Citizens Climate Lobby, we are optimists and we don't go usually a lot into the bad stuff. But what happens is when we reach a certain degree of warming, the permafrost in the Arctic melts and it will release more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. Yes, and methane. Methane's a very quick, short-term thing. It doesn't stay in the atmosphere as long as carbon monoxide does, but yeah, it's a real thing. I think the half-life is 300 or 400 years. I mean, it's way up there. I mean, and I thought about this, you know, the carbon dioxide that my grandfather released driving to church on Sunday in 1960 is still with us. You know, it wasn't very much. It was just, you know, 3/4 of a mile, but nonetheless, it stays.
The
Yes. This is an urgent time. The quicker we can respond, the better off we will be, because right now we're locked into a high level of CO2 and we're not removing it very well. One of the things we can do here in Atlanta to help remove CO2 is plant trees. So that is an option. But then if you've got a solar system, that doesn't work as well. Yes, ma'am. Yes and no. The trick is, many of the benefits of a solar system are the tax breaks. When you're a nonprofit and aren't taxed, you don't get a tax break. So people have experimented with ways that, you know, a taxable business could put it on your roof and then take the tax break and you know, sell you the electricity. Georgia also does not have net metering for Georgia Power residents. Net metering means you'd run the meter backwards and then forward. So you would get full credit instead. It's like, well, we will accept these kilowatt hours from you and we'll pay you 4 cents a kilowatt hour for them. But then when you want it to turn the lights on at night, we're gonna charge you 13 cents a kilowatt hour. So Georgia Power has not been a great friend for churches and nonprofits adding solar systems. But do look at Solarize Atlanta. If you have a roof, you want a southeast, southwest, south-facing roof, and you want no direct shading from trees during the day. Yes. Mm-hmm. There are a number of solar companies. I don't know if Solar City is one or not. But it is good. There is a company, there is a system, though, that we want to incorporate. It's called Pay As You Save. Right now, if, say, I got a $1,000 loan and then did some things to my house to cut my energy bill, then I would, if I sold the house before I paid off the bill, suddenly it would all become due. Whereas pay as you save means that you sell the, means that the bill is paid off as part of your power bill every month, so that it's attached to the house. You know, it's not no longer a personal note, it's a house-related note, and so that it would be picked up by the next tenant. But meanwhile, I'm saving money on my electric bill, and the next tenant saves the same money on the electric bill. And it's literally, you save money on the electric bill while you're paying off the cost of improvements. So we're going to see if that happens. Yes, Bill.
Yes. Well, you were talking a little about Georgia Power,
way behind time and way over budget. Yeah. Yeah. And as a member of Citizens Climate Lobby, we do not take an opinion on nuclear power. I've heard some activists say, well, this will open the door to nuclear power. Well, the advantage of nuclear power is that it's not creating carbon dioxide. But the disadvantage is you have all kinds of radioactive stuff. But we just said we're not going to fight over that. It's not going to take a time. So I need to cut this off in the interest of time. But if you're interested, you can send a letter to your congressman. We have constituent comment forms in the back. And there are little cards you can sign. And what am I? Oh, and you can sign up if you want to just get email from us. So, yes, if you fill out a constituent comment form like this, we will collect them. We will make two copies. And so one copy goes to Senator Isaacson, one copy goes to Senator Perdue, and one goes to your congressman. And we will hand deliver these at our November meeting. So it would be wonderful to have those because congressmen are motivated by the people in their district. Thank you so much.